pack your bags, start the car, and get on the road. It's time to go across the country, 2 minutes at a time, for the biggest stories of the day, where they're happening.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Indianapolis, Indiana.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Boston, Mass.
Miami, Florida.
It's the 2 Minute Drill on the program.
Second half of the program begins right now. It's brought to you by our friends at Twin Peaks, twinpeaksrestaurant.com. If you want to find them online, get over there for your fantasy draft. Did you know that you can get a $50 gift card? Commish! Are you the commish of your league? $50 gift card at Twin Peaks for doing your fantasy draft over there. You can stay cool under pressure with the 29-degree man-sized draft beers. Great made-from-scratch menu, like I said, plus a $50 bonus card. For the commish, an additional $5 bonus card for every drafter there. So everybody wins at Twin Peaks. Visit twinpeaksrestaurant.com/fantasy draft for more info. That's twinpeaksrestaurant.com/fantasy draft. Always a great place to watch the games, whether it's Royals baseball, NFL football, college football. It's all going to be on now, man. Go check it out. Twin Peaks has you covered. Go see them today. Let's get things started here. We begin the drill in Toronto, Canada. Our man, Mike Wilner from the Toronto Star, is there. Mike, how are you, sir?
Doing all right, thanks. How's it going down there?
Going well. Let's first talk about what the reaction was when Whit Merrifield was traded to the Blue Jays. Did everybody go, wait a minute, the guy who can't come up to Toronto? What was that initial reaction like when that word came down?
That initial reaction. Absolutely. That was it. I mean, and it was confusing. We had never heard that the Blue Jays were talking about him. He didn't fill an obvious hole that they needed to fill, and of course he didn't come to Toronto because he wasn't vaccinated. So we were trying to figure out, okay, so if he gets the shot this day, then it's got to be 14 days, and when's he going to be able to come to Canada? But we didn't know at the time, obviously, that he had been pre-vaxxed in anticipation of a trade. But I think it was just it was a little weird. It was, where does this guy fit? And you know, he's not having a particularly good year, so how does he help? But I mean, so far he seemed to do pretty well up here.
Yeah, what's the reaction now? Do they like him? Has he been a good fit to the ball club?
I mean, I don't think anybody even talks about the whole vaccination thing anymore. As soon as he put it to bed, it was put to bed. And you know, he's a guy who's been around a while. He's got a solid skill set, obviously, as you guys know down there. He hits, he can play defense, he can run, and he's been playing a lot of center field with George Springer on the injured list. So he's fit in pretty well, and he's not, you know, he's not being asked to hit at the top of the order. He doesn't have to do any heavy lifting offensively, so that's a bonus too.
Did they do enough at the trade deadline? I mean, or was there much higher hopes than what they actually got accomplished?
Yes and yes. I think that everyone wanted a big splash, and they didn't get a big splash. But the splash they made, while not huge, was exactly what they needed, right? They needed to address the bullpen. They got Anthony Bass, who, while he's not a big name by any means, he had the lowest ERA and the lowest whiff of any reliever who was traded at the deadline this year. They got Zach Pop and his 98-mile-an-hour sinker. They got Mitch White for depth in the starting rotation and for length out of the bullpen when everybody's healthy, and they picked up Merrifield. So no, it wasn't as fancy as getting a Luis Castillo, who I think a lot of people really wanted the Blue Jays to pick up, or you know, landing a Juan Soto, which I don't think was ever really in the cards. But they addressed the issues that they needed to address, and they're still the ones being chased, right? The teams behind them needed to do a lot more to catch up to them. And I think they went into it thinking, look, the chances of catching the Yankees for first place are minimal, so we're not going to blow up everything in our minor league system to try to catch the Yankees, because it's probably not going to happen. Let's just firm up our hold on the top wild card. And now they have to start playing a little bit better.
How do you think they match up with the Yankees and the rest of the teams that are expected to be in the playoffs? Do you like the Jays' chances once they get to the playoffs?
You're going to hate this answer. I don't think it matters. I really don't. I think the playoffs are a whole new season. They really winning a best of three, a best of five, a best of seven doesn't really have anything to do with what it takes to win over 162. Your depth isn't tested. Your bullpen doesn't have to be more than, you know, you don't need more than four decent pitchers in your bullpen. You don't need more than three good starters. So I really do think that once the playoffs start, everybody's got just as good a chance to advance as anybody. And, you know, the Braves proved that last year.
The one last question. NBA has announced that you will have to be vaccinated to go into Toronto to play the Raptors again. That's no shock, I would think, to anybody up there in Toronto. And did you get any reaction, or is it just business as usual now in Toronto?
No, it's just business as usual. You know, whenever stories like that come out, we always say, yeah, it's the same deal here, right? You have mm-hmm. to be vaccinated to come to Canada. We have to be vaccinated to go to the U.S. So the rules are exactly the same on both sides of the border, but just there are, you know, there's only one team up here in Major League Baseball. There's only one team up here in the NBA. So obviously that spotlight shines. But, you know, whenever we're told, hey, this is Canada's rule, the answer is no, it's not Canada's rule. It's the United States rule first, and Canada adopted it after the U.S. put it into practice. So want to cross the border either way, get a shot.
Mike Wilner in Toronto, Canada. Great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it. Have yourself a great week.
All right, thanks. You too.
New York. Dan Schwartzman, D-Sports Media in New York, New York. Dan, how are you, sir?
Great, Trent. How are you, buddy?
Doing very good. What's wrong with the Yankees?
They stink. I mean, they can't hit. They can't pitch. They can't run bases. Fielding, I guess, is semi-okay. But overall, they're a disaster, and they've been for the last 3 weeks to a month. Nothing seems to go right. They can't put together hits here to score runs. They're batting like .150 in the last eight or so games. Pitching hasn't been good. Clay Holmes has been terrible as a closer. It's time to maybe replace him at the back end of the bullpen. Injuries are now starting to hit the team. DJ LeMahieu is now injured as well. He's joining Stan. He's joining all the other guys who are out. Severino, of course, out as well. So it's just everything went well for them for a while, and now everything's going wrong.
Yeah, and that's what made it kind of puzzling, that they were trading off pitching, right? Like, I mean, you know, how much have people freaked out over the fact that at the deadline they were moving some, well, not Clayton Kershaw's, but pitching depth in a sport that pitching depth is everything?
Well, the one that really didn't seem to make any sort of sense was trading Jordan McDermott to the Cardinals for Harrison Bader. Now, Harrison Bader can feel, really can't hit much, right? And he's also hurt. And they're saying, well, he might be back in September. Well, that's not helping him right now. And they need some outfield help because, well, Aaron Hicks is terrible, right? They got rid of Gallo somehow, so at least that's a positive. But they're not getting a lot of quality at-bats right now from the outfield. So why bring in a guy at the bum foot for a really good starter who consistently has an ERA under four, who's a good four or five guy in the rotation, right? Made absolutely no sense. Now, yeah, you get rid of the minor league guys because you bring in Frankie Montas, who looked good, by the way, in his last start. And that made sense. But the reality is, you're right. I mean, the Yankees seem to be making these moves without thinking of the fact that you need some depth, and right now it's killing them.
Yeah, no doubt. Are the Mets actually the better playoff team?
Yeah. And when you have a DeGrom, who, by the way, hasn't missed a beat since coming back, and, you know, Max Scherzer's going to come back, and, you know, as he comes back, he's always ridiculously great. And the guys behind those two have been phenomenal as well. Taijuan Walker, guys like that. Chris Bassett has looked good as well. And do you want to face DeGrom and Scherzer in a seven-game series? I don't. They're dominating. And I think no one can beat that 1-2 punch. And that's why the Mets right now are looking great and are poised to really make a big run in the postseason.
Is Buck Showalter the most popular guy in New York?
Yeah, because, look, you know, Yankee fans, and as you know, I'm a big Yankee fan, Seren, Yankee fans love Buck Showalter, and I think he got a raw deal. You know, as great as Joe Torre was, Buck Showalter was the guy that really kind of helped build that team. Remember, he left after 1995, right before the dynasty started, after they made that wild card run and lost to Seattle in, I believe, those five games. But the reality is, Buck Showalter has always proven to be a great manager. Wherever he goes, he gets the most out of the guys. Forget the years in Baltimore. That was just a terrible situation. But when he got hired here in New York, sir, and everybody said, or at least anybody with any sort of baseball knowledge said, That's a great hire by the New York Mets. And guess what? He's proven it. That's a guy who's a Hall of Fame manager. I'd love to see him win a World Series at some point. But Buck Showalter's done a fantastic job, and people love him right now in New York.
Yeah.
And Steve Cohen, by the way, the owner, because he spends money.
Yeah, no doubt. And that makes all the sense of the world. Zach Wilson, non-contact knee injury. How disappointing is this, and what's the expectation on when he'll be back?
Well, Jets are cursed. Honestly, I'm exchanging emails or text messages with Jet fan buddies of mine from high school. And it's like, yeah, okay, kind of expected that. You know, the other shoe drops at some point being a Jet fan. It's going to hurt because regardless of, look, he might be back in 2 to 4 weeks. We'll know tomorrow when he undergoes this arthroscopic surgery in L.A. If it's 4 weeks, chances are he doesn't play week one against the Ravens and Joe Flacco gets that. But Zach Wilson is really missing out on important reps here going into the season, right? So when he comes back and it's going to be week one or week two, it's going to take him a couple of weeks of game action to kind of get back in the groove. And he may have some sinker games because of that. So it definitely hurts him. And you wonder, is he going to be 100%? Because mobility is a part of his game. And if he's not going to be as mobile as he can be, that's going to really hurt. Now, I do think he can beat you from the pocket. He's got a great arm. The reality is, in today's NFL, you have to have some mobility. So this is quite a setback for the Jets.
What's the early returns on the Giants under Brian Daboll?
People like Brian Daboll. Says the right things, does the right things, seems to be accountable. The problem is no one's saying anything good about Daniel Jones right now, and that's not a good sign. You know, Daniel Jones goes in as the starting quarterback, but he's being thoroughly outplayed by Tyrod Taylor. But you're going to win anything with Tyrod Taylor as your quarterback? Okay, maybe you win 6-7 games. Maybe you make the playoffs. You're not going to go anywhere with Tyrod Taylor as your quarterback. Daniel Jones is supposed to be the guy, and he hasn't proven that. So as good as Brian Daboll so far has proven to be, the fact is he can be hamstrung by having a bad quarterback in Daniel Jones.
Could you see him actually go with Tyrod Taylor?
Yeah. Look, Brian Daboll wants to win games. He's not beholden to Daniel Jones, right? He didn't draft Daniel Jones. Neither did the new GM there. You know, he didn't draft him either. This is a Dave Gettleman bust, right? So the fact is they have no allegiance to Daniel Jones unless ownership says, hey, he's got to be the guy. So if he's not playing well, and these guys want, you know, Joe Schoen, the GM, and, of course, Brian Daboll want to win games, if Jones is not the guy they feel that can do it and Tyrod can win him games, I don't see why they have to go with Jones. I think they could go with Tyrod, or maybe they make a move for a guy like Jimmy Garoppolo. You never know.
Yeah, that's the one that's out there. If you don't like what you got, there is a guy who has experience who's available. We'll see if they make that move. Dan Schwartzman in New York City. Great stuff as always, buddy. We appreciate it. Have a great week.
You as well, buddy. Take care.
It's raining in Baltimore.
Glenn Clark Radio in Baltimore, Maryland is next. Glenn, how are you, sir?
Soren Petra, been too long, my friend. I'm great. How about you?
Doing very good. Not as good as the Ravens. What, 22 in a row now in the preseason? Why do they win all these? Yeah. Why do they win all these preseason games?
Boy, that's a great question, Soren. Look, if I'm trying to be charitable, I would say because John Harbaugh teams typically end up being quite prepared. I think everybody knows he has a very good record in week one. With extra preparation, John Harbaugh teams end up looking good. But how much preparation they're actually doing for preseason games, I'm not sure. Look, John Harbaugh, he's not exactly like his brother, but the one way that he is like his brother is they love competition. Anything can be a competition. There's a famous story that Peter King wrote about the two of them duking things out in the driveway. I remember once, you know, trying to do an innocuous story about a preseason game and just asking John about some goals, and he always starts by saying, we want to win the game. It's silly. It doesn't much mean anything, but I guess if you're a better, you know, it means a lot because not only have they won, but they've covered 18 of them along the way. So there's a lot of people that have made some really dumb money betting on the Ravens in the preseason over
the
years.
It's amazing what he's been able to do with that. You know, my theory is that he's got a very good deep roster, but maybe they're missing the difference maker, right? That's why their depth gets them all these wins now, but why they're not winning in the postseason, I don't know. It's something to consider. Go ahead.
Yeah, Soren, I would say there's something to that, right? Like, this is not a star-studded roster. There's, of course, Lamar Jackson, and there are good players. Mark Andrews probably moved into the world of being a star. He's one of the better tight ends in the league. But there's not superstars much elsewhere on the field. What they've done, to your point, is significant. They do really well in the mid to late rounds of drafts, and they are deep, and they talk about it. It's why they wanted to have 5 fourth-round picks this year. It's all well and good. Good things to have. Is that going to be the difference in winning a Super Bowl? A lot of us in town are very skeptical about that.
Yeah, that's the next question for them. And Lamar Jackson, you mentioned, has set a deadline by week one.
Yep.
He wants a new contract, or he's cutting off contract negotiations. Should we take that as what? We're miles away from seeing anything get done, or no, he feels pretty good, and it's just like, let's keep this moving along.
Saran, about 3 weeks ago, I was given some information that there was more optimism than there ever had been before about getting a deal done. That was 3 weeks ago. So I'm kind of out of the market of trying to read any more tea leaves at this point when it comes to Lamar Jackson. Jason Cole reported last week that he's looking for more guaranteed money than even Deshaun Watson got. That, you know, sounds crazy, but at the same time, I don't know why you wouldn't, right? Like, that deal's out there. Why would you suddenly say, well, if he got that, that's just for him, I can't get it? Look, it's an awkward situation to be in. It's not surprising that he would say, we're not going to keep doing this during the season. Of course, he doesn't have an agent, so it's not like the agent can do the work while he prepares to play football games. Once the season begins, Lamar Jackson needs to focus on playing football games. The one thing that still dangles over this is the moment the season begins, Lamar Jackson is signing up to play for $23 million this year. Whatever your opinion is of Lamar Jackson and how much the Ravens should get him, $23 million is not market value for a quarterback like Lamar Jackson. So I do think there is at least some urgency in his camp to say, that's not the number we should be playing for this season. Is that enough to bridge the gap and get things done? That remains to be seen.
Yeah, that is, you know, the gamble that you make, right? Does anything leak out from the Ravens? Are they saying anything about, good Lord, it's a pain in the ass to have to deal with the player and not have, a bit of a buffer? I mean, is anybody from the Ravens ever let it slip that they don't like the fact that he doesn't have an agent?
No, they handle, you're not surprised by this, Saran. Like, the Ravens are a quality organization. They handle things very well. It's weirder than that, though. Like, Steve Bisciotti, the owners' meetings this year, said, I just don't know if Lamar feels like he's worthy of a contract yet, which was such a bizarre thing to say. And the first time we talked to Lamar after that, he was like, no, I feel plenty worthy. Like, everything about this is so weird that's coming from either side. Again, because we don't have an agent that we're getting information from. And then on the flip side, because the Ravens are they're playing a very weird game where they're negotiating with the player and trying to win with him in negotiations, but not trying to publicly fight with him because he's literally the guy they're negotiating with. It's one of the more bizarre situations we've ever seen. It's so difficult to cover, almost to the point where I've kind of said, until I get hard information again, I'm almost done talking about it. We've got enough with the quarterbacks that are setting Lamar Jackson's market. We know what the market is. We're aware. We saw Kyler Murray's deal. We've seen it. We know what the deals are. Until it's done, it's weird, man. It's just a really weird conversation to keep having.
O's are 1.5 out of the wild card. Do you like their chances to be able to run it down?
Boy, that's a great question. I think they have a chance, and I don't even know that a month ago I would have said that. I think you saw over the weekend, you know, they had an offensive onslaught on Friday night and a win over the Rays, and then they really struggled the last 2 days. They were almost the victims of a perfect game that wasn't broken up until the top of the ninth inning yesterday against Drew Rasmussen. They are still a team that on paper isn't this good. They've got a great bullpen. Their outfield defense is exceptional. They got a lot of team speed, but they're a bottom third offense with mediocre at best starting pitching. Obviously a catcher who's moving into the realm of superstar in Adley Rutschman, but could they do it? Yeah, I mean, they've gotten this far. They've had one of the better records in the American League since June. There's no reason for me to say they can't, but still, there are so many deficiencies, it's hard for me to imagine that as they have to keep playing games. They go to Toronto. This is a big series for them this week in Toronto for three. They're having to play the teams that are in front of them in Toronto and Tampa, and boy, it's tough. If I was a betting man, I would say no, they end up coming up a bit short, especially after they got rid of Trey Mancini and Jorge Lopez. But, hopefully D.L. Hall made his debut over the weekend, one of the top pitching prospects in the system. They're expecting him to help a little bit out of the bullpen again in September. They can just keep patching it together. It's not impossible.
You mentioned that, you know, what they did. They were sellers at the deadline, and here they are
right
in the midst of things. If they would get into the postseason, then lose in a you know, a decisive fifth game or seventh game in some play around, it's going to be nothing but, well, how would those guys have helped us, right? I mean, it's almost like their worst nightmare is to actually make the playoffs.
It's been tremendous fodder for what we do, right? Like, it's a strong opinion that can't be proven one way or the other. But the large belief here is that this team can't win a World Series, so it's not the end of the world that they would make these moves. Trey Mancini is a very popular person here, so that one really stung. But, you know, he probably wasn't going to be back next season. For the most part, the fan base can understand it. But to your point, there's no doubt they get into the playoffs and – you know, offense is the issue. The bats go quiet for three games in that series. There's no doubt that that conversation will come back up. They're saying all the right things. They're saying that this offseason is when they're going in. Mike Elias has said now multiple times they plan to spend money and that they start to plan to be competitive next year. This is kind of gravy. For the most part, the fan base appears to be okay with that, with a few, you know, people that will always say the same thing. When you have a chance to win, you should go try to win. Right now, I think that in a weird, strange way, you're right. It would almost become awkward for them to get in and then for it to be clear that they just needed one or two more pieces and they could have really done something this year.
Glenn Clark Radio there in Baltimore. Great stuff as always, buddy. We appreciate it. Have a great week.
Thanks, Loren. Talk soon.
Look up Roxy Bernstein, 95.7 The Game, A's Radio, ESPN, Westwood One. He does it all. Roxy, how are you, sir?
Don't look me up in San Francisco right now because I'm sitting in Arlington, Texas at Globe Life Field, Seren, so they might be disappointed.
Yeah, my bad. tell me, Jimmy G, what's the latest?
Getting uncomfortable now at this juncture because Kyle Shanahan kind of took a shot at his work ethic today, and some stuff's starting to unravel. I think the
Niners that'll get him traded.
Well, that's the problem, is I think they realize there isn't exactly a market for him. Like, people want to just draw conclusions that Cleveland or the Jets will be a landing point for Jimmy G, and I don't think there's a real market for him, to be honest with you. I think the Niners, look, they didn't cut him today. They made five roster moves. He wasn't one of them. He's not going to make the trip this upcoming week to Minnesota when the Niners have joint practices with the Vikings and play the Vikings in a preseason game. I think it's eventually going to come to a head. They're just going to have to cut him because they're not, I don't think, going to get anything remotely close to what they want from him, or for him, I should say.
Yeah, it does seem like. Do you see any scenario where he's back as the backup?
Not the way it's going right now. I think some serious fences would have to be mended. He's working out on the side. He's not participating with the team. He's been at practices, but the Niners are resigned to the fact this is Trey Lance's team, and they might move forward with Sudfeld as the backup. So where does that leave Jimmy G? If the Niners don't bring him back as a backup, I think that the money is an issue as well. But it's really becoming an uncomfortable situation for all parties involved.
Trey Lance, what's, the Bay Area just going absolutely berserk after that first performance? It looked pretty good from afar.
I wouldn't say berserk, Seren, but there's a lot of excitement. He was efficient the way he ran the offense, and he threw the deep ball, which is something that's been lacking. Jimmy G, that was really one of the knocks on him, is he could not throw the deep ball. You go back to the Super Bowl, right? If he makes the throw, the Niners probably win that Super Bowl against the Chiefs. He missed the throw in a deep ball, and Lance is showing the ability to connect on the deep ball, and that is a big, big add for the 49ers, that you're able to stretch the field. They feel they have the weapons on the outside. Guys like IU can get down the field. Jimmy G could not get them the football. That's what Lance can do. Now, I don't know if he's as accurate underneath as Garoppolo. Look, Jimmy G, all he did was win football games, right? And Trey Lance, the jury's still out on how he's going to be, but there certainly is a lot of excitement the way he has looked in camp and then the preseason game against Green Bay Friday night.
Yeah, no doubt. Debo Samuel contract, what's the expectation? Was the way they use him change? You know, supposedly he was upset about running the ball so much. What's the expectation on how things will look with the new big deal in hand?
I anticipate him getting used the same way we saw. Maybe not as much early in the season or the middle of the season, Seren, but when we get to crunch time and into the playoffs, that's when I think you'll see Debo more utilized in the running game. They're not going to abandon it, but he's not going to be used for 10 to 15 carries a game early in the year. You might see that come playoff time. But early in the year, the occasional end-around, jet sweep, you're going to see that. But I think if he does get a lot of carries, the bulk of it will be at the end of the year when the Niners really need it.
All right, so your prediction on their season is what?
I think the 49ers are going to win somewhere 12 to 13 games this year. I think defensively, as long as they stay healthy, certainly with Bosa and the pieces they have on that side of the football, the explosiveness they have on offense, I think the center position something that the Niners have to address, hoping that sorts itself out here as camp goes on. But this is a really good football team. And I know it's a tough division with the Super Bowl champs in it, but I think this is a really good football team that's going to be right there at the end again.
All right, and finally, the San Francisco Giants. Is all lost? Is the season finally cooked?
It's awfully tough. I mean, you're so far back in the wild card. And, look, nobody's going to catch the Dodgers in the West. It's all about the wild card now. And there aren't that many teams in between. There's only Milwaukee in front of them. But the problem is how far back they are, and they just haven't been consistent. The offense has struggled. The players that had career years last year, whether it was Brandon Crawford, Brandon Belt, have not delivered this year. The loss of Buster Posey, they've just been unable to overcome all those things.
Will they give a long-term deal to Carlos Rodon?
I think that there's a definite possibility. The way he's pitched this season, the Giants need to be committed because he's a legitimate ace. And I'd be interested to see what happens, you know, in the future if the Giants, when Aaron Judge hits the market eventually, if they try to be players in that regard because he's from the Central Valley in California. And they'll have some money to spend at that point. That's the one thing I keep an eye on with the Giants. It kind of goes against the grain for what this organization has done recently under Farhan Zaidi, but I wouldn't rule it out considering they really need that presence in the lineup.
All right. Great stuff as always. Roxy Bernstein in the Bay Area. Appreciate it, buddy. Have yourself a great week.
Talk to you soon, pal.
Good sense. End of the hour answer. Settle down, you. What school has the longest active streak of being ranked in the AP preseason football poll?
Longest active streak.
34 years.
34 years. So they go back to what year? That's tough math, isn't it, right there?
Eight would have been the last time. So 89 through 22 would have been. So 88 would have been the last time they weren't in it.
I'm going to try Georgia first.
Georgia has been ranked 21 straight years.
Okay.
Not my alma mater.
Not Kansas. You know, if we're going to rule Kansas and Syracuse out right out of the top. I'll take Missouri out for Curtis while we're at it.
Please. Please do.
34 straight years. It's not Alabama because they were
they've
out.
They've been 15 straight.
Yeah. Not Texas, not USC.
Louisiana State?
Nope.
No,
they had a 21-year streak snapped this year. First time in 21 years they've been preseason polls.
Ohio State.
Yeah, that's where
34
I was going
to land. Straight, second longest active streak, Oklahoma at 23.
Speak when you're spoken to, Nate. Sorry. I don't need you stepping in here trying to show off. Come on, man.
With all your knowledge and your big brain and stuff.
I'm the worst trivia person ever, by the way. So I don't know. I appreciate you giving that one that I could have an answer to.
That and, like, terrible at pickup soccer, apparently, based upon what I was hearing this morning. By the way, what is it? Nate Bucati joins us here in the program. By the way, it was Good Sense that we were giving away there. Get you some Good Sense. We got some this weekend. It's a lunch almost every Saturday or something. One of the two. You can put in the order. Go by, pick it up. I have $5 on my loyalty club. 10% back you get on that loyalty club. Can't beat it. Buy a $20 worth of Good Sense. The next time you get $2 off. It's that simple. It's that easy. Go to GoodSenseSubs.com to put in your order. Pick the time. Pick it up whenever you want. Meat, cheese, they slice that right in front of you, bake the bread fresh twice each day. Not going to find a better sandwich anywhere than Good Sense. Go to GoodSenseSubs.com. Nate Bucati joins us. We're going to talk about his Big Steps Foundation. But first, let me get to the bottom of this. Have I not heard two different people piss and moan about being the last pick in this media soccer game?
Jason Anderson, he's Mr. Irrelevant. I'm just the last pick on my team.
So then he was last after you.
Yeah.
Like, no offense, but like, is it former Olympians that you were in the mix with? Because you two aren't. It's a media game, right?
Yeah.
Well, where do they go to find this? Like, seriously, is it like the old guys that cover track meets or something? Like, because I wouldn't have put you two last, probably out of the media in this town. Like,
There's clearly some sort of vendetta out there, and I'm going to be settling some scores on Friday night. I don't know what's behind all this, because I wasn't there for the draft. Maybe that's it. Maybe it's because I didn't turn up, you know. But
So if you weren't there, that's what it is. They threw you on me. You think that's it?
Maybe. I don't know. We'll find out. But they're gonna be sad that they passed on me.
Rue the day.
Yeah.
And the glowing butterflies are gonna be there to cheer you on. Is that
glowing
right?
Dragons.
Oh, dragons.
We'll be
my
there
bad.
In, yeah, full force.
My bad.
Yeah.
What night is this?
Friday night versus Angel City FC.
All right.
Be fun.
Yeah. Ball hogging.
I'll be ball hogging like crazy. So I hit the gym today, ran some sprints on the treadmill, getting ready.
Oh my God. That alone, just sprints on a treadmill, makes you a D-bag in my book. Oh my Lord.
I mean, hey.
Look at this. Look at this. Head of gray hair doing sprints on the treadmill. Who's he trying to impress?
The fifth grade girls that I coach in soccer. I gotta
God.
Show out. They're gonna be out there.
Oh my
I'm barking
God.
Orders at them all the time. I gotta perform.
I might actually be out there just to sit there and heckle you. My Lord. My daughter's been wanting to go.
You would never do that to me during a sporting competition.
Never. I heckled you at one of your own charity runs. What makes you think I wouldn't do it at a sporting competition, for crying out loud? Yes, I would. Absolutely, I would. Let's do talk about. I want to talk some sporting as well. But let's talk about your big steps. Huge fan of all that you have done. By the way, congratulations. It's been remarkable what you've done.
This is the tenth
annual.
Yep.
And
final.
And final. Mm-hmm. And so if you've ever said, well, I'm going to go do that, and then the day rolls around and you don't end up doing it, this is the 10th and final. If you've ever enjoyed Nate Buchanan's work anywhere, this is how you could say thank you. Go out and take part in his Big Steps run. It has been a phenomenal run. Run has been, but a phenomenal streak that you've
had.
Pun
intended.
Yes, raising a ton of money for a cause that's near and dear to your heart. If anybody hasn't heard, this is in honor of your friend,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, my dear friend Sean Biggs, who died of cancer 10 years ago, and I guess 11 years ago now, because we put the first race on almost exactly a year after he died. He was from Abilene, Kansas. He went to the University of Kansas with me. That's where I met him. We both took up distance running together our senior year in college because we were stressed out about our futures and were struggling to sleep at night. And he had researched that distance running was a great way to relieve stress. And so we started running. He went off to Massachusetts Institute of Technology to go to grad school because he was a real dummy.
Yeah,
he also He also turned out to be.
Wait, hold on. So I get why you were stressed, right?
Right.
What the hell are you going to do?
Yeah.
And I worked with you early in your career, and you should have still been stressed then.
Yeah, I'm still stressed to this day. So whatever.
But a guy that can get into MIT, why was he stressed?
You know, it's actually a great lesson in mental health because he dealt with all kinds of anxiety issues that I didn't find out about until after he died.
Wow.
His parents told me all about it. He was the starting quarterback on his high school football team. He was a star on a state championship basketball team. He was a 4.0 student that spoke fluent German and, was going to go to MIT. He was good at everything. In fact, when he started distance running, he was in Boston training, just running on the track at MIT one day. And one of the guys from the Boston Athletic Association, which is the most exclusive running club in the country, I didn't even know what it was until Sean casually mentioned to me one day that he was running with the Boston Athletic Association. Hey, who do you run with? He was like, what do you mean, who do I run with? I run by myself. No, what club do you run for? Because in Boston, everybody's in a running club. And he said, I don't run with anybody. They said, well, you want to run with us? And so he ended up running the Boston Marathon 7 times, ran sub-3 hours. They don't just let you into the BAA. You got to be elite. He just was. He was good at everything, but he was one of those guys that just constantly putting pressure on himself to achieve and not to let anybody down. He was just a remarkable human being. And so when he came down with cancer, it was stage 4, really rare cancer. He was 36 years old, had a 6-year-old and 5-year-old at the time. And that was the part that hit me the hardest because I had just become a new father at that time. His kids are both high schoolers now, which is crazy to me to think about the journey. And it's such a weird thing that this has been the most tragic thing that's happened in my life. I'm fortunate enough that I haven't lost any parents or siblings. And so he was the closest thing to a really close family member for me that died young. And it was the hardest thing. It was the most painful thing I've ever experienced. Out of that, some of the most beautiful moments in my life have ever experienced. And I think you can identify with that. And maybe someday we'll talk about that a little bit. But some of those beautiful things have been the moments I've had with his kids that I otherwise wouldn't have had this deep connection with them that I do. But I just went up to Chicago. They live in Chicago now, and played golf with his son and tennis with his daughter. They're beautiful, amazing high school kids. And they come down every year for the race. They get to hear all of his old friends tell stories about their dad because they didn't get to really get to know him the way they should have. And we celebrate his life. And then on the side, we raise money for some really good causes. So it's been an amazing 10 years, really. I've gotten way more. I know it sounds like such a tired cliche, but it's just a 100% honest truth. Way more has come back to me than what I've put into it. So I would encourage anybody, if you're dealing with something like that, if you throw yourself into making something positive out of it, you'll be really glad that you did.
But what you put into it is significant, right?
Yeah.
I want to bring this up because I do. First of all, and let me say congratulations to you and Stephen for winning our ESPY. The work that you guys do. I voted for you, by the way.
I appreciate that.
The work that both of you do is remarkable. And, you know, I've told you for a long time, and I mean it. You know, and Ryan Lefevre does great work as well. He's another guy that I would look up to, and I just marvel at. And I would say is a mentor or is a guy, but I haven't been able to figure out the thing that I want to do, right?
Yep.
But I have been so impressed at how moved you were and how moved to action you were in getting this done, because you can have intentions. But can the rubber meet the road? And you did that. But it's been, when we say it's the 10th and final, it's an unbelievable amount of time for you and your board members. It's really just a handful of you putting this thing on. And it's with everybody growing older and more kids and more responsibilities. This is going to be the 10th one because it's become too big to be able to sustain, right? To sustain the way you want to.
Yeah, so we do a race in Boston, too. That's where Sean, you know, he went to MIT. He lived the rest of his life there until he died of cancer. And the guys there are going to keep that race going because that's what you do when you live in Boston. You run races and you put on races, and that's just what they'd, if it wasn't this race, they'd be putting on another one. But this one, we're going to keep the foundation going, and I'm toying around with other ideas of ways I want to continue to honor Sean's legacy. We'll continue to raise money for the KU Cancer Center and Camp Kesem and all that, but it's going to be much on a much smaller, probably more intimate level, because the big event, it is a lot. And we have a board of directors. I get way more. So the thing about the ESPY was one of the it's the nicest award anybody's ever given me for anything. It really meant a lot to me, and I was overcome emotionally by it. But at the same time, you know, it feels a little weird having people give you honors for doing something for the community. The reward's already there. You know, you're not really, it feels weird getting. And the other thing about that is our board of directors, Emily Burns Mitchell, who grew up with Sean in Abilene, Jill Clemens, who's a cousin of Sean's, JP Garrett, who is a fraternity brother of Sean's, Dave Gillick, who's the guy who lives in Boston and runs our Boston component. They do as much or more work as me. And I get all this love on the radio and stuff because we have a platform here and people call it my foundation. It's not my foundation. It's our foundation. It's all of us. And they deserve more credit than I do because I get too much already. They came to me and said, look, we all have kids. We have full-time jobs. This is 10 years. It's been great, but we it's too much. And I'm glad they did because it was the right decision, but it was a decision I probably would have never had the guts to come to because I didn't want to let anybody down, especially his. Having the conversation with Sean's parents and wife and kids was a difficult conversation that we weren't going to do the race anymore. But they were very supportive about it. They were great. And we're going to continue to do stuff together as a family. But anybody that's done anything like this, it's a lot of time and effort. And right now we all just kind of feel like we have growing. I have three kids, and that time right now, I think Sean would say, you need to spend that time with your kids. You need to spend that time doing things with your family. And so we're kind of, that's why we're pivoting the way that we are. But so we want to go out with a bang. And the last race in Kansas City is going to be on Sunday, this coming Sunday. And you can still register. BIGGsteps.org is the website. And one thing I do want to point out, since we all are just volunteers, none of us have ever taken a nickel from the foundation. Every single dime that we raise either goes to paying the expenses of the race or straight to the charities that we support. And we support KU Cancer Center, which just became the latest comprehensive cancer center in the country, which means it's one of the premier cancer centers in the entire country, and it's going to save thousands and thousands and thousands of lives. And we've helped them get that done. We've been a small part of it, but we've been a part of it. And then Camp Kesem, which is a camp for children who have parents that either are battling cancer or have died of cancer. And our retention rate is 100%. Every single kid that's gone to the camp goes back every year. We started the first ever Camp Kesem at the University of Kansas in the state of Kansas. It's a nationwide organization, so we support them. And we have an engineering scholarship at KU where we send engineering students on study abroad. We give them scholarships to study abroad because Sean studied in Stuttgart, Germany when he was in college, and that was his dying wish, was he wanted more college kids who couldn't afford it to have the opportunity to live somewhere else in the world and see the way that other people do things and go about their business. And so we send three kids overseas every year from the KU Engineering School to study abroad as well. So yeah, those are the things that our money goes.
That was an experience that was obviously giant in his life, and yeah, he wanted other people to do it, and you're making that happen. Again, how do people get signed up?
So it's very easy. You go to BIGGsteps.org. His name was Sean Biggs with two G's. So we call it the Big Steps Toward Cancer Prevention. 5K, 10K, family fun run and walk. So you can sign up for the 5K, the 10K. The walk is 1 mile. So if you don't want to run, you just want to come out and go for a nice little 1 mile walk. The weather's supposed to be beautiful Sunday morning. It's at the KU Edwards campus, 127th and
Quivira.
And you can sign up online. You can sign up in person at Packet Pickup on Friday and Saturday at the Gary Gribble right there at 119th mm-hmm. and Quivira. Or you can just show up the morning of the race. It's 8 a.m. on Sunday. So if you come, just come early. Registration, I believe, begins at 7. So you can show up at 7 and register right there on site if you don't have a chance to do it online. If you want to get a T-shirt, we always have cool T-shirts every year. If you want a T-shirt, make sure you sign up online ahead of time. It'll get you a better chance.
Curtis wants to know, do you go to 6X?
I'll check in with our treasurer on that, Emily Burns Mitchell, and get back to
you. You really need to check in with someone to know.
I knew
if for a run, you
that.
Have a 6X shirt.
I know we go up to double X. I know we go up to double X.
It's sweet of you to try to,
Can you stitch two of them together?
But some fun things we have, Chris Cake pancakes for purchase there. So and we also have free Kona Ice. The folks from Kona Ice are kind enough to donate the ice truck. So free Kona Ice for the kids. The Heatherstones, a band there, plays. It's a fun event. We're there to have a good time. One thing that's really cool, too, in honor of Sean being in the engineering school at KU, the Jayhawk Motorsports team comes. And I know a lot of people are getting into Formula One because of that Drive to Survive documentary, which my family and I are super into.
I love when you guys come late to my sport.
We're totally latecomers to it, but it's fun. And the engineering school at KU is one of the schools in the country that has a Formula One team where they build a race car, and they race it against other universities at Formula One.
Against
One
Formula
tracks.
One? The $495 million Mercedes budget? Are they?
It's not at that level.
No? Okay.
But they build their own race car, and they race them, and they bring the cars, and they build a new car every year. It's part of the project. And
right.
So they bring them in the trailer and all that stuff, and they'll rev up the engine for the kids and let them sit in the engine and all that stuff. So it's pretty cool.
And did any of the kids get a drive?
No, if they've got a license and a helmet.
Okay. It's a Formula One style car?
Yes.
Any chance Curtis can get in there and give it a go?
I think the cockpit might be
do they bring a
little snug.
Wow. No shoehorn.
A lot of shots of Curtis here today.
You squeezed two of them in.
two shots of Curtis.
Nice feel-good segment.
Marathon runner Seren Petro over here taking shots of Curtis.
Yeah, Frank Shorter over here throwing me under the
I'm
bus.
I'm wearing a black shirt.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm
looking good. Thin. Makes you thin.
Curtis is literally like, does the run go by his apartment? I can't remember because he's literally right there.
Yep.
Yeah. Does it?
I'm three blocks away.
Through his kitchen, I think, doesn't it? And the route right
there.
We'll
try to be as loud as possible at 8 o'clock in the morning for you on a Sunday.
Take some cymbals.
Bang some pots and pans as we run by.
You have to compete over the racket of my neighbor upstairs.
Oh, little feud, huh?
Oh, boy.
We'll say a few, but it's I don't know what their hours are, but they appear to be all the time.
All hours. All hours. Yeah.
I chose to
live in
the
neighbors of the people that make Mr. Hand, Mr. Fist.
Oh.
1 a.m., 4 a.m., 7 a.m., 10 a.m., 1 p.m., doesn't matter.
You're willing to adjust to their schedule. Just pick
one. What kind of racket are we talking about here? Is it entertaining stuff or just loud?
Well, they have hardwood floors upstairs.
Spring
and
squeaking?
Playing basketball?
I'm guessing she has wooden shoes, but...
Just river dancing just upstairs all the time?
And the dog will just decide, I'm going to run for 20 minutes. So you hear that unmistakable dog... Okay, gonna run sprints. Cool.
Well, they should. You know, your neighbor should bring the dog out.
Well, maybe
dogs are welcome. Gary Lezak's brought his dog many times.
Maybe if you weren't such a fat ass, you could live on the second floor.
No.
You know,
I'm not climbing steps.
Anyway, bigsteps.org.
I have just tweeted out the link to the page where you can register. So
thanks, Curtis.
Go to my Curtis Siebold on Twitter. You'll find it there.
Can you retweet it on mine?
One story that I'd share real quick, if you guys let me, too, is your guy Champ.
We got nothing but time. You mean the guy that's over there freaking out, saying break, that I keep giving the middle finger to?
I haven't. Oh, is that who? I thought you were flipping me.
Do you think it was for ha-has?
He was battling cancer the first year we did the Big Steps race. Mm-hmm. And I got an email from him. He hadn't even interned, I don't think, yet at the radio station at that time, because he was a student at Kansas. And you ran the second race because you right, Champ? You said
ran is a generous term, is it not?
No, you'd be shocked at how you're about to feel terrible. I put on most of my weight after my last surgery. I could actually run, like real run back then. So yes.
So all right.
So I heard the announcement of the race on my way to chemo, and I was like, that'd be fun. And then I went through the first round of chemo, and I said, that wouldn't be as fun as I thought. and so it took me till the next year. And one thing you guys don't know, really nobody outside my family knows this, but why KU Cancer Center is such a big deal is it was about 3% for me. We were thinking 10 months. And, I mean, it was bad, man. With what I had and how far it had spread. And so that, again, you can't ever guarantee these things, but that's why it's important to have a place like KU Cancer Center here, because you don't have to get in the van and drive 10 hours and find a hotel. You can just do it there. And people do that. They come from all around the country for what KU Cancer Center offers. If I get through this, and at that point it was a pretty big damn if, I'll be in the next year's race, and sure enough, I've been bothering Nate ever since.
Yeah, I remember we had you in.
Yeah,
talking about when you were doing that race. So, it's important work. One more time on the, I was going to talk sporting, but you know, but more important things I think we've covered. Bigsteps.org.
BIGGsteps.org. And it's Sunday morning. Just feel free to come on out too on Sunday morning.
8 a.m. is when it starts. Pre-register at 7.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Yep.
All right.
And then, or come to packet pickup on Friday or Saturday as well.
And we do recommend cymbals to go by Curtis's place.
Yeah.
Be good times.
Be as loud as possible.
Be good times.
Yeah.
10th and final, if you just, are joining us. So, Nate and Steven do such a great job. If those guys entertain you, I've always said this, a great way to give back, this would be it, because it means a lot to Nate. So it'd mean a lot to him if you take part in it. We'd love to see it be the biggest and best one yet.
Yeah, and one of the cool things, one of the traditions we have too, is that we have somebody read the runner's prayer before every race, because that was one of Sean's favorite prayers. And we have another fraternity brother, to go back to Champ's point about why these cancer centers matter so much. When Sean was diagnosed, he was given about a year to live, and he had stage 4 cancer, and it had spread everywhere. And he told me at the time, You know, the reason for optimism is if you can hold on long enough, they keep coming out with new treatments and new breakthroughs scientifically every year. And if you can hold on long enough, they might just come up with a breakthrough that changes your odds. Well, it didn't work out for Sean that way, but 5 years later, another one of our fraternity brothers, a guy named James Noble, who's from Derby, Kansas, and lives up in Vancouver, Canada now, was diagnosed with stage 4 melanoma. And we couldn't believe, same group of 8 buddies of ours, somebody else had the same diagnosis. Well, he was treated with something called immunotherapy that did not exist just 10 years ago when Sean was battling cancer because of one of those scientific breakthroughs. I got a call from James about a year and a half ago, and I was sure it was going to be terrible news. And he called me in tears and he said, "I'm cancer free." And he told me many times, it's not lost on me that I have access to a treatment that did not exist when Sean was alive. Yeah. And I'm here to watch my kids grow up because of it. James has never made it to the Big Steps race. He is coming to the race this weekend. He's flying in from Vancouver and he's going to read the runner's prayer before the race.
That's awesome.
And I just FaceTimed with him today, and sorry, I'll get a little choked up on this, but he said, I made a promise, just kind of like Champ, when I beat this thing, I made a promise to Sean, I'm gonna show up. It's not easy to get from Vancouver to here, especially in today's world, post-COVID and all that. And he said, I made a promise to Sean, I'm going to be there. And since this is the last one, I can't miss it. So there's a story right there. That's just one guy,
yeah,
right, whose life he gets to watch his kids grow up. He gets to be there for his kids because of these types of breakthroughs. And the KU Cancer Center is going to have more and more and more of those because of what they've done being a comprehensive cancer center. It means tens and tens of millions of dollars pouring into that facility every year that's going to help thousands of people.
BigSteps.org, B-I-G-G, steps.org is where you can register or just show up at 7 a.m. Race starts at 8.
Yep.
Coming up this Sunday, mm-hmm, right, over mm-hmm at the KU Edwards campus. Nate, thanks so much for spending some time with us, buddy. Thanks for telling us about this. Thanks for doing it for 10 years, and can't wait to see what you're going to do next, and hope you let us be a part of that as well.
Yeah, we're not going to stop, and thank you very much for the platform. I really appreciate the support, and thanks, Champ, for letting me ruin your clock. Good luck the rest of the day.
Yeah, have fun with that. I'm out of here. We'll see ya. Nate Buchanan. It's not easy for one man to wreck 2 shows' clocks, but Nate Buchanan has done it today. We will take a break. Thank you very much, Nate Buchanan. You're in the program. Right, wrapping up this hour, getting a little bit behind, but we're going to catch back up. Coming up in our next hour, we will get you the things you need to know. Also going to talk quarterbacking, Rise of the Black Quarterback, what it means for America. Jason Reed, the author of this book, is going to be with us. We'll talk quarterbacking, black quarterbacks in particular. Coming up in our next hour, some more Chiefs. So we'll hear some Chiefs sound from camp coming up in our next hour as well. And like I said, get you the things you need to know. BigSteps.org is one of the big things you need to know. Nate's race coming up this weekend. Nate's foundation, not even his friend's foundation. You know, we don't want to give Nate all the credit.
Yeah.
BIGGsteps.org, 8 a.m. on Sunday, 7 a.m. if you want to register at the race, but you can go online right now. BigSteps.org, that's BIGG, in honor of his friend Sean Biggs. We will take a break. When we come back, the other things you need to know.
All right, who threw the last perfect game in Major League Baseball? Brought to you by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.